Hello, everyone. Thanks for giving us your time today. I'm Ian Hamilton in New York with David Heaney in London broadcasting for us today. For those of you just joining us, David and I meet each week in this virtual reality studio to discuss the next steps of personal computing. We've got live comments and a global audience. David, what do we have today?
Not a huge news week this week, but we still do have three major topics that we're going to try and dive deeply into. The first thing we're going to talk about is Black Friday being the biggest ever revenue week for VR in the United Kingdom, according to a leading market research firm. We'll talk about Meta teasing that render of the feature-packed, futuristic Mirror Lake concept headset, and we'll talk about when that might eventually someday arrive in actual products, if at all. And finally, we will talk about Bloomberg's report that Apple has been aiming internally to launch Vision Pro by the end of January. So if that's accurate, Vision Pro could be less than 6 weeks out, which is fascinating to think about.
We got viewers out there in Santa Barbara, Pennsylvania, Scotland. Love seeing the global audience. See several people out there in the United Kingdom. I am curious how the audio filtering on your headset works today, David, because I have moved locations in New York and I am on a busy street out here on the other side of this wall with a lot of honking police activity out there. So that is New York City outside my microphone, and if you hear it from time to time, I apologize. I will try to find a better location, but just going to give that warning up front here. You want to get into that first subject? Any comments you want to talk about before we jump in?
Yeah, I'm confident that our noise filtering will be able to mask that out, but audience, you can let us know if you can hear the sounds of New York City at any point. But yeah, let's just dive directly into that first piece of news. This report from market research firm GfK that Black Friday was the biggest ever revenue week for VR in the UK. So more than at any time in VR's past, that week in the United Kingdom was the highest for both headset unit sales and for revenue. And based on the fact that the unit sales went up twice as much as the revenue, I expect that the majority of that was Quest 2 at its crazy Black Friday deal that effectively valued it at £200. We talked about this before, where it's priced at £250 for the rest of the year, but on Black Friday, they were also giving you £50 of credit, so that effectively valued it at £200. If you got that on Amazon, that was direct Amazon credit you can use to buy anything on Amazon. If you got it directly from Meta, it was Meta Store credit you could use for games. So, you know, if you were someone who only wanted to use it for PC VR, you could buy from Amazon and get that 50 credit. But if you were someone who would ever at any point in owning this headset want to buy £50 of games throughout your entire ownership, then you do it from Meta and you still effectively get it for £200.
I'm seeing that we've got Nicholas watching from Sweden, and Paradise Decay said Sherwood Forest. And the thing is, we write about virtual reality, so there's legitimately they could be watching us from Sherwood Forest. Quest 2 at this crazy deal is hard. We've been recommending on the show to kind of hold off because of the massive upgrade that the XR2 Gen 2 is going to bring if you go for the Quest 3. We don't have a lot of data points to actually point to when it comes to VR is not dying, right? When we're wholeheartedly pushing this refrain, VR is not dead. People who are claiming that it is have been beating this same drum for about a decade now, and they're doing it from similarly baseless, like it cuts both ways. We don't have a lot of data to say VR is selling great or it's being used great, but we also don't have a lot of data saying that it's dead either. So any article you see like definitively saying either way is bogus. We're making a very obvious claim here that there are actually people month after month in growing numbers using their headsets month after month after month. And that's just intuitively based on what a handful of sales numbers and the active user base is supporting those sales numbers from a handful of devs. And these are people that we're in conversations with and we watch their communities closely. But that this ultimately is the only indication we have that VR is growing in any real fashion, right?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things you see that a lot of people have been monitoring is the Amazon sales charts. So for each category in Amazon, you have a ranked which products are selling the best. And Quest 2 has been up near the top of that for weeks now since this deal. And even before that, for a while, as the holiday period is arriving. And the only thing ahead of it are very low priced products like gift cards for the PlayStation Store or Xbox Store. It really has been one of the, if not the best selling consoles on Amazon throughout this holiday period, which is remarkable. And you also have that, of course. We have, as you say, there's active user bases from developers that talk about how that's growing. You also see this on the Steam hardware survey that we talked about last week, that is starting to grow again, remembering that that is ranked against the growth of PC gaming in general, not as an absolute measure. So we're definitely starting to see a resurgence. But as you say, the problem is that this is Quest 2, a lot of this. And Quest 2 is using that three-year-old, soon-to-be, you know, four-year-old processor that is just not going to deliver the kind of fidelity experiences that a lot of people expect. We've already talked about many times in this show how that new XR2 Gen 2 in Quest 3 delivers that truly generational leap in graphics quality and brings you from the kind of aliasing and shimmering you're used to on Quest 2 to a much more clean image that doesn't have all of those kind of harsh artifacts. The other thing we should probably talk about is PlayStation VR 2. So this GfK survey was first reported by gamesindustry.biz, and they had a conversation directly with this market research firm. And so someone asked the author of the article whether this was Quest and PS or Quest or PSVR 2, and they said both. But of course, if you look at those same Amazon sales figures we're talking about before, where it shows you in Amazon how many people have bought it roughly in the past month, and you can see in the charts where it's ranked, PlayStation VR 2 has not been doing well. It is being significantly outsold on Amazon, at least we can say, by both Quests. Quest 3 is even significantly outselling it.
Yeah, and I'm seeing a lot of comments all around the United States, Utah, Denver, lots of places all over. I've seen King Patrick, New York, in the house. There's a gap here between sales and retention, the active user base. Those are the things we don't have any. It is fundamentally not in the best interests of most indie devs to share their numbers publicly, because it gives a target on their back to their best competitor. They're whoever is right behind them doing whatever they're doing in a slightly different way now has a goal to hit. And so fundamentally, it's not in the best interests of like the shooters out there to say what their concurrent VR user base is. We go to places like Steam, DB, and try to collate concurrent user numbers, and we get in ballpark there on some of these things. But there is still, it's so that's true of just how limited our data is to begin with. And then you've got what games do we actually know are selling well and then retaining its users. There's a bunch of shooters, and then there's these games that people put down for a month or two and then come back to it every couple months. And I think there are a certain category of games that are on that kind of release cadence that have supported and held a business for anywhere between, 2 and 8 years. And the fact that those games are still selling and still have active communities is pretty much our best indication that VR is on a growth path. But the thing is, it's not going to change this holiday season based on these sales numbers, is a lot of these headsets are going to go into disuse. That doesn't mean VR is dead.
Yeah, the only real figure we've seen on this was last year, last October. There was a figure reported by the Wall Street Journal that they purported to have obtained from a source within Meta that said there were just over 6 million monthly active Quest users. And around that time, based on when we know that Quest hit around 20 million unit sales, there were probably just north of 15 million Quests. So at that time, a year ago, only around a third of Quests were being used monthly. Now, I say only because that's actually, personally, I think it's rather impressive given how early the technology is. As we say on this show all the time, we're actually, believe it or not, still in the early days of VR. Headsets that look like this are going to be comical in 10 years, just like the giant CRT monitors of the 90s or the enormous brick phones of the 80s. We are still very early. I think there's going to be a dramatic increase in retention going from this to this, from Quest 2 to Quest 3, for many reasons, be it the slimmer profile that gives you the better comfort, be it the fact that you can see your surroundings and pass through in the menu, given the fact that the graphics are better, that just all of these little improvements that build up together make this, I think, something that's going to retain more. People are probably going to use this more than Quest 2, which does make it rather disappointing. What I would love to know is some sort of statistic on what the retention is for PlayStation VR 2. What I'd also like to know is, for people who use Quest for PC gaming, how will Steam Link affect that retention and making that process just so frictionless now that you put on your headset, you launch an app, and you're pretty much instantly in Steam VR?
Yeah, a lot of different things to discuss there. Just one little anecdote, personal anecdote, to put a little character on your story there. I had my 8-year-old son asked me out of the blue one day, are they going to try to make VR headsets and glasses? And I was like, oh, what a wonderful question. This is my opportunity. This is my moment to shine. I've been waiting years for this. All right, so I go and grab Quest 1, Quest 2, and Quest 3, and I stack them on top of each other. And I point out, you know, this was the one when you were 4 years old. This is the one when you were 5 years old. And this is the one that came out when you were 8 years old. And how old do you think you'll be when it's the size of sunglasses? And he said 13 years old. So we've got a prediction to compare against Michael Abrash now. You ready to talk about anything else? Any comments you want to respond to?
Yeah, Guy is saying that the Wall Street Journal figure, Guy Godin, the developer of Virtual Desktop, in our comments is saying that the figure from the Wall Street Journal of 6 million active Quests was when Bone Lab and a bunch of other profile games were released. I don't think that game would have been remarkably different. And the last point I'd make on this, because I've heard this point made before, is this was not a figure released by Meta. Meta did not decide to do this. This is something that was reported by the Wall Street Journal. So there's not directly that incentive. The last thing I really want to talk about, though, is just this PlayStation VR 2, because I've said it before, it's just not performing the way I would have hoped it had. It's not delivering on the huge potential that Sony has. And I think there's two reasons behind that. One is the price. I will say this before and I'll say it again. You can't sell an accessory for a console that costs more than the console. It's ridiculous. To most people, that's absurd, and they're not going to buy it. Given that there is not a full standalone computer on board PlayStation VR 2, there's only a kind of basic low-end MediaTek chip. Sony really should have tried to get this thing to be less expensive than the original PlayStation VR, not more. Imagine a parallel world where PlayStation VR 2 had a version, or was just the only version, that was $250 or $200. That, imagine how many more sales there would be there. That's something I really think, making this a high-end headset that costs $550 is going to be a great thing for all of the enthusiasts that bought it. I'm sure they will be saying, you know, don't take away my OLED screen, don't take away my eye tracking, don't take away my high fidelity haptics, don't take away my headset haptics. But at the end of the day, you're going to run into a problem that if not enough people buy this because it's at that price and has all these features, developers are not going to put in the resources to build out the AAA games that you want. And that brings me to the second problem with PSVR 2 so far, is that the content has just been a letdown. There were these great launch titles. There's been Capcom, who's held up the entire platform with Resident Evil 8's VR mode and now Resident Evil 4's VR mode, but it's still missing a lot of the kind of titles people want. And the crazy thing to me is that it's still missing huge PlayStation VR 1 titles that Sony could fund the developers to port over, be it Skyrim VR, be it Minecraft, be it Star Wars Squadrons, these huge titles that are sitting there with VR support for PSVR 1, and they're not available on PSVR 2. It's a massive missed opportunity, and Sony has so much low-hanging fruit here, I think.
thing, I guess, just contextually that I'll add to the active use and this 6 million number is I do think that number and when it came out was probably cherry picked for to ride a wave of really good content, really good sales, and during a really big push for the Quest 2. So I think there's an interesting argument to be made that maybe it's down from there. Sorry, David's back.
You're saying that it's cherry-picked, but Meta didn't release this figure. This was leaked to the Wall Street Journal.
By whom? By the creator of the data, right? I mean, so someone inside, there's a different thing with a data like that leaking and something like a Quest Pro being found in a hallway. There's the intentionality of that is more suspect, I suppose. It could have just been leaked, right? But it was during a good time, I guess, in the Quest 2's life cycle. You think, is that a fair way of qualifying it?
I personally don't think so. People can disagree. I don't think that there was anything remarkably different about October than now. I mean, right now you have titles like Arizona Sunshine 2. You have Asgard's Wrath 2 on the horizon. You have Assassin's Creed VR. Since then, we saw huge titles like Breachers. I think there are many months you could pick where you'd see this spike. Perhaps there are months where this fluctuates, but I don't think it's fair to say that was any kind of maximum, especially given we saw bigger games release in other periods as well. You know, Resident Evil 4 VR.
And to think, like, so you add in, like, it's, I would be willing to bet we're probably above that number now. When you tack on Quest 2 plus Quest 3, like, I would imagine we're well above that number of 2002 just at this exact moment. Like, we talk to devs, and I mean, honestly, the more data we hear from more devs, the more comfortable we feel in sharing more things with our audience. We try to protect our sources as much as humanly possible. David Heaney and I, when we are discussing articles, really only share as much as is needed between one another, just because we literally have to communicate over the internet with one another. And that means using everyone else's platform for our communications. Like, that's how we try, at least, to be careful about this stuff. And there are groups of devs that I'm familiar, like, that I know of, that are doing okay. Like, they're still chugging along. And when you start tacking on, we're at the cusp of a change over here where we're going to have to see where everything drops from the Christmas season. Christmas Day is going to come and go, and we're going to see charts shared by a lot of the devs out there showing what their sales were on Christmas Day 2023 versus 2022, 2021, 2020. And there's going to be a number of devs that are going to show a higher chart on Christmas Day 2023 versus previous years. And I don't know, like, that's end of debate to me, right? Like, that's, there's nothing else to get into right now. What I wanted to point out here, the frustrating thing is here, we've got multiple devs in our comments who don't know the real information here and don't have real market data to grasp onto about the opportunity. And here we are as journalists trying to grasp onto this, and we don't have great data. We're grasping onto a leak and an estimate, and it's very frustrating for everyone involved.
Yeah, it's very frustrating that we don't have data that we can specifically reveal publicly for obvious reasons. As you say, we can't reveal information that developers have given us in confidence. We can't reveal information that they sometimes, you know, they are not supposed to publicly release, in a sense. We can only go on what's being shown in the conversations that we have. But I think this is why this is such a useful data point for everyone. You know, this is unequivocally coming from one of the leading market research firms that has been monitoring video game console and accessory sales in the UK for years. And they even monitor, you know, I looked at this report and some fascinating things, like they even monitor the number of people that buy racing wheels and flight sticks. You know, they are really digging down into what hardware for gaming is being sold in the UK. And they're unequivocally saying this was the biggest week in the history of the UK for VR headset deals.
But again, this is a market research firm. This is not the sales data out of out of developers, and I appreciate Dell's comment here. Sounds like a great opportunity for Upload VR to aggregate data. I mean, this is honestly the first time I've ever said publicly how we approach talking about this information internally. If you share something with David Heaney and I need to go edit his work, I'm only going to ask him the information I need to know, and he's going to do the same of me. And that's how we operate in getting our articles out there. And if you feel comfortable with that way of sharing information, yes, tell us. Tell us what your sales numbers are. The more info we have in sort of a background way, the more we feel comfortable saying in a public way, hey, you know, we're actually hearing from multiple people. These things are going okay. Now, all of this, I have to qualify. We just did an indie showcase, right, with devs who are single solo devs working out across the globe. And they honestly don't have too much of a chance of making money off of their projects. Like, I can't smash drums at the beginning of our showcase. Davigo, they just did their launch trailer with a PC versus VR game. Those are both cool, interesting ideas. And smash drums is a single dev working on that project alone. But I don't know really whether any of those projects have hope of making real significant money. And that's, we have to acknowledge that too. It is not easy making games or making money from games, and that's always going to be the case here.
Yeah, it's always going to be the case amongst pretty much all media, you know, be it ebooks or music. If you're making music as a musician, if you're making a movie, if you're making a TV show, all of these things follow power laws where there are always going to be these massive winners and people who, unfortunately, despite the fact that they put in huge amounts of effort, sometimes even despite the fact that the end result is good, you know, they're not going to be able to make it financially. It is, unfortunately, that's the case. If you look on Steam, how many games are released every single day? How many go on to be successful? I really do want to see companies like Meta and companies like Sony give us things like daily active users, monthly active users, and more market data so the developers do have a easier target. Developers who have already shipped something kind of know the market already, especially when they're some of the top sellers. If they're making a sequel, Arizona Sunshine 2, for example, they have a good understanding of the size of the market based on their sales data so far. But new entrants to the market, they, without this kind of data, they're really going to struggle to know what to build.
Yeah, so our guest Blair in our comments is just hammering out this point of just daily active users is not sales. And that's, yeah, absolutely fair. And we would love to have daily active users as well. The problem is the only genre that even attempts an estimate would be first-person shooters via concurrent players. And in every other genre, you're talking about the leader in that category not wanting to share that data because it is so competitively valuable. So rock in a hard place here on the information, right? Like we all would love to have that information. And I would like to see that daily active user number. I've talked to certain devs who have been on sale long enough to know that their communities are doing okay. I don't know what else to say there.
Yeah, I mean, we also have had a few developers that have shared their VR monthly active users. Again, not daily, but I remember the statistic that seems to have been forgotten about that Rec Room mentioned that they alone had 3 million daily active users, monthly active users, most of which were Quest. So again, that suggests to me that 6 million plus monthly active users on Quest is not some sort of aberration. If Rec Room is saying that they're seeing 3 million in that one app alone, so you add all the other apps that people are using. But yeah, it would be great to see more data. It would be great to have developers be able to get more guidance on this market. Unfortunately, it just doesn't sound like something that's going to happen anytime soon, though maybe at some point Meta can be more open about this, though I doubt it.
It's funny. Yeah, well, like if there's any devs are watching us who have the daily active user, you know, they've got the chart that shows it going up and to the right over the years from, let's say, 2019 to 2023. And I've seen those charts, but they never have an axis on the left-hand side. And that's the best we can ever hope for come Christmas Day. Ready to talk about the next thing, David?
Yeah, as you say, the publicly released ones can't show a y-axis, but at the very least, that would be, you know, fascinating to see more developers release. As you say, the time we tend to get this is around the new year. We see year in recap, we see Christmas Day comparisons, and yeah, that'll be very fascinating to see, because as this report said, there's going to be the biggest ever in-stream of new VR users for these developers, at least in the United Kingdom.
Look, let me make this abundantly clear for anyone. If you know someone who is getting a VR headset this Christmas season, or if you yourself are getting a VR headset, a developer you know making a game you love is going to be watching their sales numbers on December 24th, 25th, 26th to see what the future of their livelihoods looks like. Those are real people on the other side of your purchases waiting to see what comes of their data. And you have like an entire industry, the box office, right? You've got reporting built around which movies sold the most ticket sales each weekend. Well, this is the devs themselves waiting for their ticket sales, waiting to see how many people they can hire or how many people they have to let go, right? But they don't know. And it's enormously stressful. So I want you, our audience, to understand that devs are going through a tough time out there because they ultimately don't know. So, I mean, like, keep that in mind as you're making your purchases, dealing with tech support over the holidays, right? These are real people on the other sides of your purchases. And I just want to, I need to make sure that gets out there.
Yeah, let's talk about the next topic then, the Merlake concept render that we've seen. So if you watched this show maybe around a year ago, I'm not sure the exact date, you'll have remembered that this was shown off as a kind of schematic for a concept, a research concept from Meta that incorporates all of the advanced technologies that they've been showing off at their display systems research team into one headset that has a sleek form factor. And some of the important features seen here include reverse pass-through, which is obviously going to be the flagship feature or one of the flagship features of Apple Vision Pro, but was actually shown off by Meta researchers back in 2021. So I've seen a lot of people say, oh, they're copying Apple here. I'm sure Apple may have had it in their own research earlier, but it's fair to say that given Meta was showing this off, this is not something where they're directly copying Apple.
I want to take a pause right there, and I really need to give credit where it's due, right? Technically speaking, Meta and Apple at this moment in time, December 2023, have each shown off the same number of working prototypes of the exact same technology in public. Zero. They both shown off zero in public, right?
Yeah, that's fair to say. No one has actually seen the eyesight feature on Vision Pro working yet. When it was shown on Good Morning America, for example, you could clearly see that it was not functioning on the front of the display. As at the WWDC demos, including the one that Ian was given, eyesight was not working then. And we have not heard any report of anyone actually trying the eyesight feature on Vision Pro. It's been rumored to be the reason that we haven't yet seen real pictures of Apple executives wearing it. For example, a lot of people have asked, why is Tim Cook not being pictured wearing Vision Pro? Does it just look goofy? Apparently, the reason for that is that the feature simply doesn't work or didn't work as of a few months ago. Obviously, now that we're in December, they may have got it to work. But yeah, we see this feature being shown on the Merlake concept from Meta. We also see on the display side, the use of the Holocake lenses that they showed off last year that are even thinner than pancake lenses. So you can see the diagram here shows you the refractive lenses that you'll see in the likes of Quest 2, PlayStation VR 2, Valve Index that give you that classic bulky VR headset design. You can see in the center here the optical path for folded optics and pancake lenses that give you the slimmer headsets like Quest 3, like Pico 4, like Big Screen Beyond. And finally, on the right, you see something that has not been shipped in any product yet, but is being incorporated in a Meta prototype called Holocake 2. You can see Mark Zuckerberg wearing here and would be incorporated in this concept headset, Merlake, which is the holocake lenses. And as you can see with pancake lenses, unlike refractive lenses, the main thickness is the lens itself. With refractive lenses, the main thickness was just this air gap. You know, if you look in a Quest 2 or a Valve Index and you x-ray that thing, it isn't bulky because there's all of these components inside. It's bulky because of this optical path. It's remarkable that pancake lenses have got it to be so short, but it becomes a point where the lens itself is actually the cause of the thickness, and in many cases, the weight, which is very important to note, because as has been discussed many times on this show and elsewhere, while Quest 3 is 40% slimmer than Quest 2, it's actually a very similar weight. You can debate whether it's slightly heavier or slightly lighter based on whether you include the straps or not, but essentially, it's the same. To get one of the key contributors to that weight is, in fact, the lens. So if Meta can eventually ship headsets with these holocake lenses, not only can they reduce the thickness again, but they can actually significantly reduce the weight. Now, the problem with holocake lenses, and one of the reasons that we haven't, that Meta is not claiming that it's coming to any near-term product, is that it requires LCD panels with a laser backlight to be bright enough. It would not work with a traditional backlighting system, and there are a number of reasons that laser backlights are not ready to be mass-produced at affordable cost yet. So the other feature that we see in this Merlite concept is, of course, varifocal. And if you tuned into this show around August after SIGGRAPH, you'll have heard our impressions for varifocal when we got to try that hands-on. If you've been following Meta's research prototypes, you'll understand that what that means is that while all VR headsets today are fixed focus, with varifocal, it can actually adjust the focus of the lens based on what you're looking at, determined by eye tracking. And as I tried this out with my own eyes, it makes VR feel more real. It makes the world, it makes the virtual objects look like they are not just part of a fixed distance screen, that they're actually, you're actually focusing on an object at a given range. And it also helps with visual comfort when you bring things much closer to your eyes. So that is something that's being incorporated here in an electronic form where they use layers of lenses instead of having to use that bulky design that moves the screen. We also see a range of other technologies being presented in the Merlake prototype, including a neural pass-through where they use neural networks to generate a much more depth correct view. So there are, yeah, there's quite a few concepts here, but last year it was only shown off in these diagrams, whereas this year we see a rendering of what it would look like. But let's be clear about one thing. This is not an upcoming product, and it's not even being built yet. This is still just a research concept. The reason for showing this and the reason for even talking about it is that Meta is saying, essentially, this is the best that we could build with today's technology. If you needed to just build one of these things, if it wasn't a matter of making a product, if aliens came down to Earth and said, build me the best XR headset you can possibly build, and we just want one of them, this is what Meta is saying they could build today without inventing any magical new technology.
Yeah, so let's see here. There's a lot of interesting comments here. A lot of people responding to our information, the overall tone and depth of our information here. Please do hit the like button. Share this link out with other people. If there's a good subject we cover, give them the timestamp to get that subject in depth from us. I noticed Gamertag talking about Half Dome at some point during that. Yeah, Half Dome and varifocal displays. Most people, even those who work in VR, have yet to experience what it feels like to have a varifocal display in front of them and the added benefits of that. One of the displays that David and I got to see was this HDR high brightness display at one of the SIGGRAPH conferences. And it's very, very difficult to describe how brightness makes a scene feel more real. In the same way that this type of focusing, if you can actually focus on an object you hold in your hand, my eyes don't focus on them on this spot accurately. Well, that's what can change over time in our future headsets. And it's what we hope to be able to be talking about in this studio for years and years to come. One of the things that I can't wait for, David, is there is going to come a time when we get haptic hands, and that's still maybe a decade or more away. But like, that's going to be an eye-opening moment in the same way that some of these technologies are going to be eye-opening. The comments that I'm seeing that are really interesting, though, from our audience are people that are frustrated with Apple for marketing its feature without having it operational and functional yet, at least in a demonstrable way. And it's interesting to think that Meta has maybe done a better job here of presenting a concept as a concept, right? Like, do you think it's going to be ready by the time it ships? Because we're moving into the next subject.
I don't think it's fair to say that these are anywhere near equivalent. As long as Vision Pro, Apple Vision Pro, ships with this feature, this eyesight front display working, then it's not a problem for Apple to have marketed. There are plenty of hardware and software companies that market features that aren't actually ready until just before the product ships. That's not a problem. But I obviously, yes, if Apple is going to at the very last minute say this is not going to be available at launch, then that's something that would be a huge issue. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think Apple is going to be able to ship. I don't think they would ship without such a headline feature. They described it as being an essential part of the product that was, you know, a design requirement from the start. And just for fun, here is Meta's prototype of this from 2021. So this isn't a render anymore. This is actually their physical hardware. You can see this is very much so a research prototype. I'm seeing some people in the comments sort of frustrated that Meta constantly shows off these far future research concepts and hasn't really shipped anything yet. You know, when it comes to display systems research, you could argue though that what has been shipped in Quest Pro and then an improved version in Quest 3 is those pancake lenses. And they likely came, as we actually know, they did come through the research division where Meta poured potentially north of $1 billion into developing those pancake lenses in Quest 3, and they are best in class. You cannot find another VR headset that has better lenses than Quest 3. You can obviously say there are ones with wider field of view, but when it comes to edge-to-edge clarity, when it comes to sweet spot, they are almost impossibly good. The fact that the sweet spot is so huge on Quest 3 that you can put your IPD completely wrong and it's still fine. That eye box is wider than anything we've ever seen shipped in a product. So you do see some of this crazy research stuff. Michael Abrash, the head of Meta's research division, their chief scientist, as he's called now, he did show off pancake lenses back in maybe 2019, I believe it was, and talk about them then as a research idea. And now in 2022 and then 2023, they shipped it in product. So the last thing I'll say on this is that when Meta was talking about Mirror Lake last year and all of these technologies that go into it, Mark Zuckerberg said that we can expect these to ship in products in the second half of the decade. So I don't think this is Quest Pro 2, to get straight to the point, but I do think it might be something like Quest Pro 3.
Interesting timeline to put that on. And that's what I'm seeing a little bit reflected in our comments. Where is it? Crispy saying, love that pic, so goofy. So they were talking about this pic that we had up before of this developer with just this engineer with this ridiculous amount of kit, smiling broadly with their eyes recreated digitally on an external display facing outward on a VR headset. This is fundamentally the same or similar feature as is present on the Apple Vision Pro, but to what David is saying, what our audience is responding to, Meta put this out as a press release. They publicly acknowledged the awkwardness of this technology. And here is the researcher themselves displaying it, grinning, knowing how ridiculous it looks. Like, it's silly how ridiculous it is. But it moves the technology forward. This actually did some hard work in getting some people to open their minds to this being a really useful feature. At the same time, here's what gets what I really wonder about with this stuff, right? Is Apple not showing it being used because it could not work right? Or is it because it's not finished? Or is it because they don't want certain aspects of it to be copied? There's a lot of motivations in like that aren't apparent in announcing something before it's actually ready. And I don't want to make any conclusions about why we haven't seen these used yet.
Well, yeah, let's start talking about Apple then. And I guess we'll start by showing an image of their eyesight feature. And obviously this is presumably based on what we've just discussed, this is actually itself a render of what this might look like. I am, to continue this reverse pass-through eyesight conversation, I am so curious what this looks like in real life, because one of the things that isn't captured on a 2D screen is that in both Meta's research prototype and in Apple Vision Pro, these are lenticular displays. So you're actually going to see a slightly different angle based on where your head is relative to the person. This is not going to look like a sticker in front of the headset or a 2D screen. This is actually a 3D display. The trade-off there is that by being a lenticular 3D display, it's going to have very low resolution. You can kind of see that here when you look at it, but that doesn't really matter. You can kind of tech art this away into just looking like frosted glass. I assume based on this, that's the style Apple will go for. But this is, based on what we know about it being a lenticular display, it should look a lot better in real life than it does in an image. And that may be a problem for initial marketing, but as I've said before, I think a lot of people are going to try this out in Apple stores. I think this is going to be a big attraction in Apple stores. And I think for a lot of people, it's going to be the first time they put any headset on their head, or at the very least, they'll be in an Apple store and they'll look to the corner and they'll see someone trying it. And from then, from a marketing perspective, that could be more impactful than every piece of marketing we've seen for XR headsets so far.
But is it like, I'm trying to imagine that first interaction. Does the person come up to their friend and go, I'm touching your eyes, I'm touching your eyes, and they tap the headset, and the person doesn't actually feel their headset, you know, their eyes being touched, they're touching the headset. That's how real this like illusion is going to be of the eyes, if it's done right. I loved you saying it's not going to be a sticker or something, and it could be tech arted away to make this low resolution display look acceptable. Obviously, what is it, Looking Glass? Is it Looking Glass that uses this same exact technology? Is that right?
I'm not fully familiar with it, but it's probably similar. I'm not fully familiar with it.
Correct me in the comments if I'm wrong, but there's a whole tech product out there, a category of product called Looking Glass that has these displays that you can lean around and it'll work.
Oh, yes.
Very similar.
Yeah,
but
I remember what you're speaking of now. Yeah.
Yeah, and it does suffer from low resolution, but it's like, I loved your description of it not looking like a sticker when my impression of what those lenticular displays look like is the old holographic cards of the last 100 years. It has an appearance to it, a filmy look to it that is off-putting, and that's not necessarily great right on the front of your display.
Yeah, again, I'm so fascinated to see this. It's hard to make any conclusions without it. But as you know, you're not going to be seeing this with your head fixed in position. You're going to be, as the external observer, moving around the room. And as you move around the room and see the different angles, you should get an effective depth. So it shouldn't feel like if you're touching the front of the headset, you're touching their eyes. It should feel like you're touching a visor that they're wearing, just like they were wearing a transparent visor. Again, we need to see the implementation, but it's just really important to stress that this is not something that's going to be easily seen in a picture. And a video could be better. That could be if Apple could take a video of just kind of panning around the headset. I'm very surprised that we only saw very, very short clips of this, obviously, and it was a render in the Vision Pro reveal videos. But I'm very surprised Apple doesn't show this as a video, because like this looks bad, right? This is something that people in the wider world outside of the tech bubble have looked at and said, this looks kind of ridiculous. But it shouldn't if you're actually moving around it.
Well, like was it Palmer Luckey, I think, posted the photo of the googly eyes where he was joking that you could get most of the way there with what this functions with this. I think it's in our comments, people making this joke that you can get the function of feeling like someone is looking at you with the silliest 5-cent googly eyes stuck to the front of the headset. It's, you know, you don't want to be looking at the person. The person is doing something else when they're in VR, right? In mixed reality with, like, Apple's going straight to the end game here of imagining what if you have what, six people in a room, three people are in headsets and three people aren't. How does that physical interaction work? How does that human interaction work? And honestly, like, you do need this technology there, in, even if it's not great, in order to make that work.
Yeah, I do wonder how essential is this going to be to headsets? Is this going to be something that is in every single XR headset in the 2030s? Is this going to be just a standard feature the way a selfie camera is a standard feature on even $50 Android phones today, or, well, maybe $80 or $100 Android phones today? Or is this going to be something that is reserved for the high-end products? We've heard that Apple is considering removing this for the cheaper Vision headset that could be, you know, Vision Air or Vision Lite or whatever they end up calling it. But will that actually happen, or will Apple decide this is absolutely essential? When it comes to that comment you made there about, you know, they're doing something else, what I find fascinating about this, based on the description at WWDC, is that they will actually cleverly depict that to you outside. So if this person is doing something that completely obscures their view and they can't see reality, you won't see their eyes. You'll see this kind of blue shimmering haze over their eyes. If they're doing something that is transparent, so they can see you, but there are also transparent panes in front of you and them, they'll show a transparent blue haze over their eyes, kind of almost like a Ready Player One style effect. If anyone's seen that film, you'll know that they kind of show to people when there's something. You can see the virtual objects in front of the person through the visor. It's not that direct. You're not actually seeing what they see. That would introduce some fascinating privacy issues, to say the least. But you just see a general stylized view of holograms in front of their eyes.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of people. I think Andrew Bosworth, the CTO of Meta, probably just released a video going into the Ray-Ban glasses. I'm seeing multiple people reference it in our comments. So we'll get that digested and see what's in there. The thing that Meta, so I am a big fan of the new Meta Ray-Ban glasses. They're, and I hate them at the same time. I'm a big fan. It's a very divisive product in my head. That the thing is, it's not finished. And I think that's what Bosworth is detailing. In the announcement video for the Meta Ray-Ban glasses, they're like, next year, sometime in the next year, we're going to roll out multimodal AI analysis so you can get live information about what you're seeing. And ultimately, that is end game type strategy from Meta. If they can analyze all the video that is coming out of millions of glasses worldwide, they're going to be able to create a picture and a knowledge base of the world that's going to be unmatched. They can use that as the training data for their next generation of AI, and then use that to superpower even slimmer devices over the long term. So people in our comments helping people get that picture. So thank you to our commenters for helping people understand what that long-term goal is. And yeah, we are in real time watching Meta do its push into personal computing in not just VR, but they're going through the sunglasses route too. And they've already tried to build a watch, but they canceled it at the last second, I believe, as they decided to focus on products that they could actually make an impact on with this feature specifically, analysis of what you're looking at being pretty fundamentally key. So let's see. Do the Ray-Bans have sound features like the Bose glasses? Yes, you can listen to music on them. You can activate calls. You can live stream from them if you want. I don't like the live streaming feature. Haven't used it. I want to analyze and review my videos before I put them out there. And it's not, I don't think it's hooked up to YouTube yet, right? That's the other key restriction of the live streaming, I believe, right, David?
Yeah, it's only to Instagram. It's very directly integrated. There would probably need to be some kind of YouTube integration, because one of the things you can do is instantaneously switch between your phone as the camera for the live stream and the Ray-Ban glasses by one click or a tap on the glasses. So that kind of would obviously require integration. I guess YouTube streaming is a very different use case as well, but it would be very interesting to see that come, because one of the things we've really wanted on Quest is YouTube streaming. You can stream to Facebook, but how good would it be if you could stream directly from your Quest headset to YouTube or even Twitch and other services like that? It doesn't seem to be something that Meta is any more against. There was this era where, you know, when Quest 2 required a Facebook account, it's almost, everyone's almost forgotten that era, and Meta was trying to push its own services. You know, in Oculus Rooms, for example, you couldn't watch YouTube videos. You could watch Facebook Watch, which I assume is still a thing, but I don't think anyone really wants to use that. But we now see, you know, YouTube app natively on Quest. They have talked about YouTube co-watching in home for years now, and although that hasn't arrived, that seems to have disappeared off into the ether. But yeah, it'll be fascinating to see, as you say, how these glasses evolve as they go from not just being able to answer audio queries, but being able to answer queries about what they're actually looking at. It's fascinating to see how this will develop. And as we say before, it's really the next generation of these glasses where things start to get really interesting, where you reportedly will have a display in 2025.
Yeah, I think anyone that looks at these, as I've assessed them personally, the missing feature, so Meta is turning one on, you know, in the next year, is this AI analysis of what you're looking at. That is a key reason to go get these. The first feature was to have a camera on your face for getting videos and photos that are out of the way. You're not actually posing for photos. You're taking moments in the scene. And then you've got this AI analysis. And then the big thing that's going to really matter long term is if you've got maybe just a single line of display text. If you can add a single line of display text and have live translation or live captions, you're going to have a really big accessibility feature for a lot of people. You could have people who will live their lives with live captions on always, because it's just easier for them to read what people are saying to them rather than hearing what they're saying to them. So that's something that we could have in the very near future in a next generation that has even just a simple display that displays text. None of that, and David and I will always be really, really good about explaining this. None of that is true AR. None of that is the AR that we dream about, that all of these companies are working, that it's the same essentially as VR, but you can actually experience it out in the real world. That's not where they're going to get by Generation 3. But by Generation 3, when you've got a single line of text and you can have captions or live translation, you're actually enabling people to do a ton of things that they couldn't have without those glasses on their head.
I'm optimistic we'll see more than a single line of text. I think you'll probably get, you know, a HUD of some sort that maybe will not have the widest field of view, but you can probably by then pull off something more than just text, perhaps some other kind of contextual information. The reports around this talked about a viewfinder that would let you more easily frame your photos, though it's unclear how that would work without a very wide field of view. We have a question here from Norman Robinson in the comments, who's donated $10. Thank you so much, Norman, who says, I'm curious to know if there's a means of integrating AI into the newest AR, MR, XR headsets to provide a near Iron Man Jarvis interactive experience with the real world. So what we're talking about here is this being put into smart glasses, but that is a good question. Given Meta also makes Quest, will we see Meta AI come to Quest? Will the Quest's pass-through cameras be able to do the same questioning functionality as the Ray-Bans here? And to be clear, what we're talking about is, you know, you're on holiday and you look at something and you say, hey, Meta, what is that landmark? And it tells you what it is. Or you point it at something that's broken in your house, say your plumbing, and you say, hey, Meta, how do I fix this? And you get answers. This is the same kind of large language model technology being used by GPT-4, which is another multimodal model that has, you know, vision and text input at the same time. So it's fascinating to see, yeah, will this come to Quest? Who knows? It seems like it's an obvious thing to happen as well.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much, Norman, for the donation and a really thoughtful question. I totally get where that's going. My vision in my head, longtime viewers will know, is holodeck, very similar to Jarvis in concept. You walk into a room and you say you want the room and the scenario to meet the specifications you want. And Meta in public has made it very clear that they are working on building exactly that, that is ultimately their goal, is to build that kind of technology for you. I think like where I want to go off on that tangent is it's really interesting to think of you taking these glasses and then taking them off as soon as you get in the door, putting them in the charging dock, the charging case, putting them down, and then putting on your VR headset. And everything that was on that glasses or you analyze with those glasses is now in your headset for you to look through. And I'm seeing in our comments people freaking out already at how scary and horrifying this future is. And I'm there with you. That's why I am so torn about these glasses. We haven't seen the misuse of these. Like when you see people walk into a coffee shop wearing a Quest 3, and then within a few days, the term was a Quest Hole is trending. You get a sense of just people using technology in a non-socially acceptable way is obvious from a mile away. You can see how unacceptable this is. Glasses that have just a shining light in the corner that blinks, like throbs, like bright and low, is the only indicator you have to passerby that you're recording. And the scenarios when it's appropriate to record and when it's not, how you alert people to the area that you're recording, right? It's going to be a process over many years. We've talked about it on our show. 10 years, 15 years ago, it was illegal, and you would get kicked out of a venue if you held up your phone and started recording in the middle of a concert. Now there's thousands of people across every venue up recording their favorite songs. This is on a similar path.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this many, many times in recent shows. This is a conversation we've had probably 5 times in the past 6 shows. So I'll just kind of summarize what I've said before, which is just we're already there, in my opinion. The TikTok world and smartphones have already got us there. If you even without phones, there are people's security cameras. There's a camera on every doorbell. There's a camera in every car with a dash cam. And many cars are even coming with dash cams built into the car now. We're already there.
We're here. Yes, I 100% agree. It doesn't mean that the laws of our society nor the most common social practices are equitable to the people who are being recorded. And that's something we're going to continue to think about here at Upload VR. Let's talk about Bloomberg's report on Apple, as I'm near 12% on our battery here.
Yeah, let's get back to that Vision Pro. I think we got a bit sidetracked there. So for anyone that's not aware, we have Bloomberg's Mark Gurman, who accurately reported a lot of the features and details of Vision Pro before it was ever officially revealed or even acknowledged to exist by Apple, is this week saying that Apple has been aiming internally to get Vision Pro out the door by the end of January, and that they plan to do staff training at Apple stores in January that can involve flying out Apple store employees to Apple's headquarters and giving them all of this kind of detailed training, because Apple really wants to make this a store experience where you're introduced to this entirely new class of product for the vast majority of people who have never worn a headset. That's something I really want people to remember, that even today, the vast majority of people have not actually yet used a fully functioned headset that isn't just a phone holder, believe it or not. So Apple is wanting to introduce them to this new technology. They also have to make sure you get the right fitting. You know, there are multiple sizes for the facial interface, for the headband. Getting comfort is something that is very important, because this is a product that Gurman in the past has reported that some of the testers are finding to be too heavy. We're still in this era where these standalone headsets are packing a lot of technology and using these heavy lenses into the front of your face. So this is an experience where Apple doesn't want this to be something you buy on Amazon or walk into Best Buy and buy from some guy that has no idea what the product is and has never used it. They want you to make an appointment, reportedly, according to Gurman, at an Apple store. Go in and be personally guided through the product, through the fit, and then walk out of that store with the right size of facial interface, the right size of headband, and being familiar with what you're buying. A very different experience to what we have on Quest, where Meta ships you out the default facial interface and strap, and then you're left to fend for yourself in either buying the overpriced official elite strap and silicone face replacement, or go for one of the many third parties. It's a very different buying experience, it sounds like here. And if German is right, we could be 6 weeks away or less from the launch of what could be the most important product so far in this entire industry.
Yeah, I'm down to 8% on my battery, and I am refusing to go search for a USB charger right now. I don't want to do it. So I appreciated the comment there, making the joke of whether I'm going to mute myself or run out of battery first. I'm going to be devoted to running out of battery live on the show with you all. 7%. I am in New York now, and I am becoming familiar with the New York Apple stores. And I'm going to be haunting the New York Apple stores in the coming weeks, seeing whether they're going to be roping off any locations of the stores for these potential demos. If you are at an Apple store and you are able to get something out of an Apple employee, you can use our contact us page, use our tips page, let us know what's going on. But that's how some of this stuff gets out, right? You hear that employees had to block off an entire week on their holidays. They literally can't take a week off from their job. And that's how certain release windows get announced by various people. The thing that's going to be interesting about whether this launches in January or later is, by all indications, this is already a delayed product. This was a product that was meant to come out sooner, based on all indications. And if it doesn't come January and it gets pushed even further back, into anywhere past January, right? If it goes March, April, May, whatever, it's hurting a whole timeline of things that might come after. We're already talking about moving on to the M3 processor in the Apple line, having a device running on the M2 processor, a headset no less, that needs all this next gen technology, could be a little hard for Apple. Like during our show here, we have people in our comments telling us Lynx just delayed some of their shipments again, right? And it's a running joke now on the show of just how delayed Lynx is, where they had an opening to ship before any competitors were on the market. And like, here's Apple kind of at the top of the game. Like, they should be able to pay a manufacturer for anything to move mountains to get out there on the market whenever they want to. And they're still not able to ship this thing in a reasonable time frame.
It's important to note that this product has reportedly been delayed for years. So yes, this is arriving with the M2 just as the M3 chip is starting to ship in other Apple products. But this, I've seen some people suggest that, you know, are Apple going to swap out the M2 for an M3 in the last minute? Absolutely not. That is not how this works at all. That is not how hardware engineering works. This is the kind of product that this thing was designed years ago. It was designed around this chip. Every single, you know, detail of this is intricately developed. We have heard from other reports that this is the most complex product Apple has ever tried to manufacture. We've heard some crazy anecdotes from the production factories that apparently that it is actually so intricate with this kind of curved 3D glass attached to this aluminium frame and all of this technology jam-packed into a tiny space that they are having to find the workers with the smallest possible hands to actually be able to assemble the thing properly, and the people with large hands just physically can't do it. So it's you know, this is going to be a remarkable feat for Apple to pull off. When it comes to, you know, one of the main bottlenecks is that this is going to be the first headset to ship with near 4K OLED micro displays, which the production lines for simply did not exist up to this point. Now Apple is the first to do it. It's going to be one of those things where it's going to be years of ramp up until OLED micro displays of this density are available at a reasonable cost and in high volume for other headsets. This is going to be in many ways a groundbreaking product. And I just want to kind of talk about for a second the importance of this, that we could be, you know, less than 6 weeks away from the importance of this event, a lot of people are instantly going to dismiss this thing because, oh, it's $3,500. And, you know, that's crazy. I've even seen people say things like, this is going to feel it. You need to understand what this is. This is not the end. This is the start of Apple entering this industry. Just like back in the 1980s, if you adjust for inflation, personal computers back then, in today's money, cost $10,000, $20,000, sometimes $30,000. And over time, they got better and cheaper, just like all of this technology does. This line, Vision, is not going to start and end with Vision Pro. It starts with Vision Pro, but it's the Vision line. There will be non-Pro Visions. There will be a Vision Pro 2. Over time, Apple will make this slimmer and lighter and better, and the content for it will be built out. The Vision OS will be built out further, and it'll integrate better with your watch and with your iPhone. And eventually, sometime, Apple will try to get this into a glasses form factor. But this is the beginning of this, and even despite what this first generation hardware is, which is impressive in many ways, it's only the first generation. What really matters here is the platform that Apple is building with Vision OS. And there are many key innovations in Vision OS and architecture decisions that I think will likely make it a significant improvement over the Meta Quest OS that's based on a fork of Android. And I'm not just saying that out of pure speculation. You know, the Vision OS simulator is out there. A lot of the architecture and the SDKs have been publicly documented and played with. More than the hardware, I'm excited for the software. And, you know, people who think this is going to feel, I think you're so wrong that it'll actually be sold out. I think this thing is going to sell out so quickly that this is going to be something where even the people who want to buy it will have a really hard time getting one.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be such a failure. It will be impossible to find in stores and sell out, right? Like I got down to 1% of my battery, and I just watched it climb up to 2% because I went through the effort of finding the USB cord. I just moved last weekend, and so my USB cords are everywhere. I'm sorry. Our audience is now in the job of guilting us if our batteries run out on us, and I guess as well we should, right? We need to have portable battery packs with us at all times.
As you say, though, you did just move home. You know, I think you can be excused for still setting up in a new place. And, you know, you're not fully unpacked yet, I imagine.
I won't. Like, if you go watch our indie showcase from last Thursday, I'm proud of the fact that that went off without you realizing where I was broadcasting from. Like, that's, I think in the future, we should not always, like, we should always, after we successfully do a podcast from a really weird location, after it's successful, like, oh yeah, by the way, we did that broadcast from an airplane. Like, one day, I do want to eventually, do you think you'll ever get internet access on an airplane good enough that you can come into the studio, David?
Yes, with Starlink. We've already seen some airlines like JSX integrate Starlink, and there's people that are, you know, doing cloud video game streaming on it and things like that. You know, the key advantage there of Starlink is that those satellites are in low Earth orbit, so the latency is not anywhere near as high as traditional satellite internet. It's actually much, much closer and almost as low as traditional fiber internet. So we are very close to a world where all airlines are using either Starlink or one of Starlink's competitors that uses a similar low Earth orbit satellite group. And once all airlines integrate that, we're going to soon live in a world where the internet on your plane is going to be pretty much the same as your internet at home.
I'm seeing someone making a joke about our showcase in the comments. I think we've covered our main event. Is there anything else you want to wrap up? I want to reply to that showcase joke, because we did an indie showcase after the other showcase, and we did it from here in David Heaney's solo studio. I went into his studio the first time I've ever used it solo. He operated the studio outside. We showed 10, 15 trailers at 60 frames per second. And I only accidentally muted myself on the tablet for about 3 seconds during the entire 30 minutes. And the sound sounded great. Good job. Thank you for that, David Heaney. But I want to defend the indie showcase that we did last week and the audio quality. It was good.
Yeah, the indie showcase that we did. So the thing I was going to say about aircraft and using these on planes is that I would expect to see people using this on planes. It's not that Quest 3's hardware isn't good enough to be used on planes. It's software. The Vision Pro will have, you know, this Apple TV app that links to the iTunes store that you can download these high quality 4K movies and see them in 3D as well when 3D is supported. We've seen a complete failure on Meta's part to really build out these other entertainment use cases. We've seen them launch half-ass attempts over the years and then close them down and have them only in the US for those, even throughout those attempts. This is going to have the software that will let people do things like this. I expect the first time that many people will see this, if they aren't the kind of person that is in their daily life walking past an Apple store at least, you know, once every few months, is probably going to be on an airplane, because instead of having to use the pre-selected movies on that tiny little screen in front of you, you're going to be able to sit back and be in a personal cinema theater. And that's something that if software companies can deliver on Quest, could happen too, but Meta doesn't seem to have the will, or perhaps just not the industry links to do it.
All right, my cat has crawled on top of me here, so let's see if you can listen to him purring. Yeah, I'm gonna be wearing my Stranger Things outfit until Stranger Things VR comes out, and then I'm probably gonna keep the joke going even after then, because I think it's funny now that I put the shirt on for Stranger Things coming out, and then Stranger Things didn't come out. That's not true, but I think it's funny to just tell people that it is now.
The last thing I want to just say about Vision Pro is that I hate that this is only coming to the US first. I really hate that. I'm so very tempted to give a fake US address and make an appointment in an Apple store and fly over just to try it. Or if you're able to acquire one, you know, we don't know anything about that yet, I'll just show up at your door unannounced, unexpected. Yeah, saying, where's the Vision Pro, Ian? Where is it?
Yeah, I know. It's hysterical, right? Like, I think we saw a report out there that indicated there was a very, very repressive agreements if you're a developer getting one of the Vision Pros. Like, you have to kind of, like, have a specific number of people who are allowed to set eyes on the box itself. Like, you can't even let other people see the box. You have to tell Apple which room it's going to be stored in. You have to promise it's not going to go from one location to the other, right? We put in our formal request with Apple to review. We have not received any contact on that, so that's why I feel free saying that, right? There's a very real possibility they could reach out to us and say, hey, you need to sign this agreement until this date in order to review this product, and then from that date forward, you're not going to hear us tease that we've got this. But I joked internally, like, David, Upload VR needs to pay for David to get a hotel room near my house if they're only going to ship the Vision Pro to me, because we have to assess it together and it's that important to our audience that we both take a look at that. But again, like, some of these agreements put restrictions on who can set eyes inside the thing. If the headset is tuned just for my face, then how do we get it fitted for your face too? Like, that's the list of things goes, becomes problematic, but it's on the top of our minds that his eyes need to go in front of the Apple Vision Pro as soon as possible.
As you say, it's far too early to know the details around that. But to be clear, the Vision Pro is not fitted like a big screen beyond. It's not like the lenses are built for you or anything like that. It's just that there are different sizes of the headband and the facial interface. So from what we know, this does have automatic piezoelectric IPD adjustment. So you put the headset on, the eye tracking system figures out your IPD and the lenses move into position, just like the Pico 4 Enterprise, which has that feature, fascinatingly enough. Viper Al in the comments is saying that, what are you talking about? Meta has a great movie viewer. Please enlighten us as to what that is. Maybe has Meta launched something in the US only that I haven't noticed in the past months? I very much so am not aware of any movie service being offered by Meta. If you mean big screen, that's a third-party app that offers movie rentals, but not offline. You cannot, as far as I'm aware, there is no app on Quest that will let you rent a, you know, popular movie that's just released, download it onto your Quest, and keep it there. If I'm wrong, please let me know.
Yeah, I think you got it right, David. Yeah, we're going to be moving towards the end of the year here. We've got, we were just discussing our end of the year awards, trying to figure out who we're going to select there and what kind of awards we're going to do, what kind of format. And I'm really loving our studio. I think we need to lean into it more going into the new year. David and I are going to discuss that. But we're going to get into end of year awards. And then CES is coming up right into the new year. It's always hard to guess what CES is going to have in store. We could expect companies like Pimax probably there. They are a regular. There'll be various HMDs on display all over the place. But there's probably what we need to be on the lookout for is whether any new fundamental technology platforms get announced at CES. So if something like Qualcomm or LG or Samsung, one of these major companies comes out and uses a venue like CES to announce new things, that's what we're going to be keeping an eye out for at a CES. So we don't know if that's the case yet, but that's just a few weeks away. And we'll have the latest for you from there and from our studio here. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, everyone. We will see you next week.